Hey, cool kids, we've been out of your lives for a little while, and you've been out of our lives, and we missed you, and whether you missed us or not, we're back, kind of. We have been doing some new stuff. We've been working the gig economy and some other things, and it has taken away a little bit from our ability to do podcasts, but let's talk about it this way. It's been an experiment. It's been a spiritual retreat in working hard, working lots of extra hours in the evening, but figuring out what's going on in the world. Today's show is partly just about an update on what we've been doing. We'll be explaining a little bit about the future of the show and where we're going, but also we want to talk about the ways in which trying to find happiness and freedom in the world might involve a little bit of working with the gig economy. At least that's a possibility. That's a thing we want to talk about. There's some opportunities. There's some definite pitfalls. There are some ways in which this offers kind of an opportunity for hope for folks who want to make a change in their lives. Maybe that's you. But it also presents some worrisome situations related to security, financial security in today's economy. We're going to unpack all of this. Where are we going as a podcast? What does happiness and freedom have to do with working gigs, temporary contract gigs in this economy? How can that be helpful? How might that be harmful for you and for society? It's not easy. We haven't figured it out, and we're not going to figure it out all together today, but at least it's going to get us started on a conversation about a road forward for a lot of us who maybe want to make a life change and want to find a little bit more autonomy in our own existence. And friends, we're just so happy you're back with us. Sit back, enjoy the show. Let's go.
Right runner, 3-0 degrees.
All ahead full.
Over the years, Stacy, we have had big kid jobs. I'm not going to lie. We've had big kid jobs. I had a big kid job when I was 29. Now I feel like a big kid because I'm hanging out with the kids.
Yeah.
And then you have been lucky enough to be able to join me in hanging out with the kids, by which I mean
the gig economy.
Yeah. So we are sitting on our couch here in Portland, loving Portland, the weather, beautiful. And yet we have been working our day jobs and night jobs. We're not trying to ignore your dear listener. We still have
our regular full-time jobs.
Yeah.
And then on nights and weekends, we've been picking up extra work for extra money.
And kind of loving it.
We have an app basically that offers contract work. And so we'll see when there's open jobs and we decide which ones we want to apply for, and then they either accept us or reject us, and you know how much you're going to get paid.
Yep.
And then, you know,
you come and go. I've also been doing some work, which has been really, really fun for me in terms of personal stimulation and enjoyment. Really, a lot of this has been running concerts, comedy shows, different events that I would want to go to anyway. And so,
explore new opportunities that we've never been to before.
We've seen a flamenco show. Mm-hmm. I've been able to check out kids' music. I've seen hip hop, indie bands, and all of this. And it's been really nice to be able to just kind of get into that world, especially because we're, you know, a little bit older in a newer place and coming out of academia. You know, both of us were working in some fashion in higher ed administration, or in my case, administration and teaching. And I think for many, many years, one of the main things that kept me feeling a kind of imprisonment or feeling trapped was the idea that, yes, I know that there might be crises of conscience related to ideologies that surrounded my work in religious settings, church-related higher education, for instance. And I know that there's a lot of our friends and listeners that are pastors, missionaries, professors at religious colleges that say, yes, we're with you. And they've actually explicitly said this. We agree with you. We understand what you're saying. We agree with what you're saying, but we're trapped. We can't get out. If I decide to go the way you've gone, my finances go away as well. And the fact is, Stacey, that's true for us.
It's right? True. Like, and I would also say
we didn't become fabulously wealthy by following our consciences.
No. Yikes, no. Yeah. Hence the extra gig work on top of full-time jobs. But I would say, though, it is interesting because it's not even just pastors. I would say student loans in general. Yeah. I mean, we even witnessed, you know, this with our own children. When they go to school, you get student loans and parent loans, and they have to find work in order to help, you know, pay for these things for themselves or whatever.
Once you take the loan, you're in.
And they're trapped somehow of trying to figure out how to make money to pay back this debt, which can add up pretty quickly.
When you were 22, you decided that my path is this path, and therefore I need to take on this incredible burden of debt to be able to fulfill my true self and fulfill my calling. This was a very important part of especially Protestant Christianity, but also Ignatian spirituality, though that's got a little bit more sophistication in the Catholic tradition. This idea that I have this calling, I have to fulfill this calling, but to fulfill my personal calling, which is related to happiness and freedom, I need to take out ungodly amounts of debt. And if I change my mind, let's say when I'm 29 or 39 or 49...
Thing so far, this isn't what I thought
you're
it would
still
be.
Stuck.
Or once you're in the work environment and you realize, oh, this is not where my passion lies anymore. You have to figure out how you're going to make money still to pay those, you know, that debt back. It's really horrific for those that we've seen in the medical field or dental field. Like the amount of debt you get into to get into some of these fields is on top of the amount of education it takes to complete. Like, so you're in school longer for higher amounts of money. You have to make the money that the medical professionals make in order to even pay back that level of debt. So if for some reason you figure out that's not what you should be doing or no longer feel like that is for you,
It's not feeding you,
then
you have no choice.
You don't have a choice.
That's what we call, friends, a Faustian bargain. Dr. Faustus signs a deal with the devil so that whatever, you can find knowledge, or, you know, you meet the devil at the crossroads so you can play the blues. Maybe you want to play the blues, but if you don't want to play the blues, too late. Whatever decision you made in your 20s is what you're stuck with now.
That's crazy.
Am I talking biographically, Stacey? Yes, because, you know, when I was younger, I could have had somebody tell me maybe steer off in this direction or that direction, give yourself more opportunities. We do not have the ability to really understand ourselves and figure ourselves out in the early days, but it's ironic that your later self is a slave to your younger self's decisions.
Yeah.
If you go that route. We're talking in big, you know, maybe more theoretical concepts here, but let's bring it back down to earth. Just a few, maybe a couple weeks ago, I was feeling pretty good, but then I was given some information that caused a kind of panic in me. I had an opportunity to come back for another interview for an executive director position for an educational nonprofit that I liked. It was cool, but it just didn't feel like what I should be doing. But I realized that that was something I couldn't really turn down financially. My interview for that position came on a Wednesday. The first day of class for my middle school was a Wednesday. And when I met my kids, and I knew them, I knew a lot of them that were coming in, I realized there wasn't a lot that somebody could offer me that would cause me to not be there this year for these kids.
Right.
So I was talking to them and I said, you know, this is really weird. I've been through a lot of grief. I'm really tired. I've got, you know, calluses on my feet from standing up, doing a lot of gig work. But this is why we're letting you in on this, friends. For the first time in a long time, and certainly since some of our own personal life grief, I said, I can actually say that I feel happy and free. And even as I said it, it made me feel strange because, well, I'm kind of tired. Well,
we are working a lot. I mean, so much so that unfortunately we haven't had time to podcast.
That's
because
right.
we have to keep working. We have to, in order to even pay our bills and you know, and we kind of always had this like kind of philosophy of when the kids were younger, we were going to spend money, get ourselves into debt so that we'd have this time for them and spend
and
with them.
Yeah.
And we don't regret that one single bit, but here we are now.
Now we're paying the bill.
And we are paying the bill, but they're also not living with us anymore. So like, I mean, we have Sid with us and that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, she's busy working her own jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're all working at the same time. Yeah. She's got her own, you know, several jobs. I guess what I'm trying to say is we're not at the point where we were before of being able to have that time to spend constant quality family time with breaks and vacations and stuff.
Right.
Everybody's got their jobs and everybody's got their commitments that they have to make. Before they had their own jobs, they could spend all this time with us.
Yeah, Joshua Tree Music
and
Festival.
And we would just get ourselves
trip,
a little
Mexico.
Bit in debt to spend time with them during your summer breaks, primarily, because that's the time you had off.
Yeah.
And, or winter breaks. And, or during the sabbaticals, but like it was worth it because
we're really glad we did.
We had those moments, and now now we're paying for it. But we're like they're all older; they're grown; they have their own lives, and so that's great. But like we needed to figure out how do we make money, but not feel like we're trapped
or somebody else owns us.
Right.
For most of our lives,
that's what trapped means to me.
Absolutely. Most of our lives, when I take a position, it becomes my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like I really, you know, I'm fine with that. It's just that's a big investment. It's a big commitment. And I'm thinking at this point in my life, to be an executive director sounds like the right thing to do at this stage in my life.
Mm-hmm.
It's the right trajectory professionally. It's the right, it's the right thing to do financially so that I can afford to pay for a Europe trip or something, right? But
now we have the college loan, the parent loans from
coming in. Yeah.
No, but I mean, but graduating.
But going back to it, it's like, okay, so we were really lucky that we had the opportunity to do what we did when the kids were young, and now we're in a different stage.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of fun because despite all of the exhaustion, the physical exhaustion, it's a very different feeling from what I felt before in that when we do these gigs.
And we're working them together a lot
sometimes,
of times.
Sometimes,
You know, we started too.
Yeah.
So Jeff kind of found some of these things and was like, hey.
You should get in on this.
I should get in. And so I have, and I applied, and now I'm like kind of, getting a little bit more, some of the same, we signed up for some of the same things. And to be honest, it's like we can go out on a weekend and spend money, or we can, you know, work together and make money. And the great thing about it is it's not a job that we have to take with us after we're done.
Right. We can bust our tails to get something done, and then we get a check, and now we're free.
So last night, we were done at 11 o'clock at night, but we started at 4.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, then we...
Yeah.
We actually got our first real meal of the day, I guess, at 11. We realized, I'm like, wait a minute, I think we just had an egg to eat.
Yeah, we were sitting there, we're like, wait, we both had one hard-boiled egg each.
And we're running around this whole building, we're seating people for this event and all this stuff, and, you know, doing all this stuff. And I realized, like, oh my gosh, like, I was starting to feel faint because I'm like, I haven't eaten, you know?
Yeah, that's not to be done, friend.
No,
you should eat healthy.
Eat, especially if you are doing gig jobs that require you on your feet and moving around.
Stay nutritious.
Definitely eat. It's important. Fuel your body so that you have the energy that you need and the nutrients you need to sustain you. I'm definitely not recommending that part, but it was just one of those things where we forgot. Like we didn't really think about eating. And then until my body was like about to shut
down. Yeah, I was
down.
Like, what's wrong with you? We had just been doing.
I was worried even about eating because I didn't know if my body would take the food because my body needed it so bad. But anyway, that's a whole nother little
subject. We are not telling you this so that you can feel bad for us. We're telling you this actually so that you can at least weigh your options on how you want to live your life, right? Let me bring it back to the anchor. Mm. And the anchor is, I restarted a year here, and I have to say, I'm super excited about it. I really enjoyed myself last year, but it was a new thing. I went from being a college professor
to middle school
and dean to doing middle school. And I talked about a lot of the same things about the history of civilization, the American Constitution, world religions. I'm still talking about the same things, but I also have to deal with, you know,
parents,
middle school emotions, just attention spans. And I found that, you know, when I was teaching college, you know, if you gave me four classes in a row, normally professors aren't teaching that many, but if you give me four classes in a row, I can do that if I'm teaching the same class twice in a row, right? So I just do it twice, you know, two freshman philosophies, say, back to back. And, you know, I'll talk, I'll be engaging, but you're going to take notes. Now I've got to find a way to intrinsically motivate you, because at my alternative school, we don't have grades, you know? Well, I appreciate that philosophically, but I have no carrots, nor do I have sticks to try to encourage these kids to learn.
As well as the parents, accreditation wants outcomes.
Well, in college, parents contacted me and I could say, I am not allowed. Mm-hmm. Like, it is 100% not allowed for me to share your child's progress as a college. They're adults.
Right.
You know, they're not children. I can't, you're a kid. I cannot tell you what their experiences in class.
Middle school, they still have that.
Oh, I've got to have conferences with parents.
Yes. Like,
that's emotionally an investment.
Like I said, your school doesn't take grades, and yet the parents want to be able to figure out how do we figure out the outcomes.
And they should. And then when, instead of grades, I write like little
paragraphs.
Oh, paragraphs.
Well, I like really little paragraphs. Like, yeah. It's several pages of.
For each kid. Right. So that's a lot of work. And I like the work. I believe in the work, but it does take energy. So for less money, I'm putting in more energy. And I ask myself, is this worth it? But guess what? As we begin the school year, not only did these children bring me so much joy, so much reinvigoration, this is what's been going on for the last couple weeks. I'll tell you more, friends, in a second why it's so joyful. I'll just say they're coming ready to learn and ready to invest and to inquire and to create. So once you have that, if I have that, that's the whole world. But we were talking about in our first unit this year, our theme is abundance. So I love that theme because I'm going to get to talk. We're reading through a book called Ishmael by Quinn, and it's about civilization, religion, the economy. Highly recommended. It's about a gorilla who's talking to a human about saving the world. It's great. But it fits in with everything I've ever cared about. And then we're also going through each day one chapter of the Tao Te Ching, and we're talking about Aristotle. What this means is the goal of this year with my eighth graders is to understand for their own lives what they understand happiness and freedom to be. Because I tell them every year, my singular objective, I'm not going to list off a bunch of educational objectives. I have one objective with two parts. My goal is to help you find a path towards happiness and freedom. That's it. And if I can do that, I'm rewarded. I feel like I'm doing a good job. I feel like I'm doing what I need to be doing. But I want to get you on the path to happiness and freedom. And so to start, we talked about what on earth is happiness and freedom, which I think they go together. What is it for the Aristotelian tradition? The Western tradition, Greek tradition, that's one side. In other words, the Western tradition, at its best, flows from Aristotle and Aristotle's understanding of happiness. I suppose I'd prefer, you know, Epictetus and the Stoics, but just understanding the Aristotelian side of things, happiness is fulfilling your design, your purpose, with excellence within a a community. So you're fulfilling your potential, your purpose with excellence, aka virtue, within a community. So you've got relationships, you've got a meaningful life, and you're doing it virtuously. I really like that. That's perfectly workable. I like it. And then we compared it with the understanding of happiness that we see in the Tao Te Ching, and we'll say Lao Tzu versus Aristotle. And I'll tell you, Stacey, I've been teaching for 20 plus years at the college level, and I've had some brilliant students smarter than I am, wiser than I am, insightful, all this. But this was like the first class that, as a like a mass, like there's 11 of us, but I mean, like the whole group, like almost instantly understood the subtle difference between Aristotle's understanding of happiness as fulfilling your purpose with excellence, and the Tao Te Ching, which is being spontaneous. That's Ziran, going with the flow. Wu Wei, right? And Pu, understanding naturalness. So you're being natural, you're going with the flow, and you're understanding your spontaneity.
And with spontaneity, I would say like what? Like, because it's part of going with the flow, but it's like the flexibility, like it's the whatever life kind of hands to you. It's like being able to like, you kind of like start. So here's an example. Mm-hmm. Bring it back to this gig example. Mm-hmm. You started off with this one gig that was like contract work to do like candlelight stuff that happened to be at the Alberta Rose Theater.
Let's pause for a second. So the candlelight events that we're doing are really great. You can find them in your city. Hey, friends.
Yeah.
Maybe you right now are living near a big city and you want a little extra work. Go find yourself a way to connect with the local, say, candlelight events. It is a string quartet that will play pop music with candlelight in a beautiful, maybe, like in our case, the old church venue. You're saying the Alberta Rose Theater, historic theaters. People are really enjoying it.
So it can sometimes be that they're doing Queen.
Yeah.
Or Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Or Beyonce.
Or Vivaldi.
Yeah. I mean, so there's.
But the goal of the organization is to make music and culture accessible to people. And enjoyable. It's like, you know, you're not going, if you're not used to it.
So you're at this venue and then you meet somebody that works at that venue.
Right.
That then you start talking to them. And then it's another connection to a security position through
door position,
a door type security position at another whole venue. They have concerts and things like that going on. So right. it's like it kind of like just keeps flowing.
Yes.
When I say spontaneity,
oh, I see what you're
when
saying.
I say flexibility, right. It's like, it's this, you know, those, that part where one thing kind of leads you to another that leads you to another. If you keep,
right.
You kind of, you know, mentioned this in your book, Sexy, but like you kind of like,
which, by the way, a lot of it I've retracted, but I still love the mysticism. Keep going.
But the idea that when you're looking at, you know, for like, say, friendships or partnerships or, you know, whatever, if you want to look for dating partners and things, start doing what it is that you like and what you're drawn to.
Yeah.
And then start meeting the people that you meet in those arenas.
Right.
And then that keeps growing and flowing. And so in the same way with this gig economy work or whatever, is just like you start working at one spot. And if you like it, then you like meet people there. And then you learn, you know, this whole flow.
Yeah,
and
kind of better than college. You're figuring out what you like. Yeah.
A whole nother network. But as long as you're doing something that you like, when you're doing it, then you're going to keep finding all of those little roots. So,
or you're not doing something you like, you make your money, and then you say, I'm not going to do that again, but you are...
You learn something
very
from it.
Directly figuring out intuitively what feels right.
But I guess what I'm trying to say is with the spontaneity of something, So yes, if you find out that you don't like it, then stop doing it. But if you do like something, keep going that route and see who you meet that is also swimming along that same path alongside you.
What Stacey's talking about is my idea that instead of desperately trying to find somebody in a dating app, or I mean, you should do the dating apps, I'm saying, but you're doing a date and you're trying to find the one in this moment, that's a lot of stress. If you just do what you do and you start to flow the way you want to flow, you find out who is flowing in the exact same direction right next to me. Those are the people that should be your friends and romantic partners.
And I would say if you're ever on a date and you're pretending like you're anything other than what you are, then that's rough, because you're going to have to either keep up that facade or they're going to figure out the real you. So you might as well just be you.
Right. And it won't
and
be fulfilling.
If they're attracted to you still, then great. And if they're not, well, then it wasn't meant to be. But at some point or other, it's going to break down if it's not the real you.
Let me get back to
my question. Likewise, though, when it comes to jobs or some of these employment things, you keep doing what it is that you like to do, and then new opportunities also maybe come from that.
Without overthinking it. So, yes, right. you're exactly right. But go back to the conversation with the kids, and this is where we were going with it. So I asked them, when you look at the Aristotelian version, which says, yes, basically Aristotle says you're an acorn. For you to be happy, you need to be in the right soil, and you can't have a ceiling to become the oak, right? Mm-hmm. So happiness is fulfilling your potential and doing it well, mm-hmm. right? And then being part of the system. Not the system. I mean, like the ecosystem, the habitat that you're in, the village. And of course, the Tao Te Ching also talks about a village. So I would say that, you know, at the start of it, we all agreed, me and the kids, the students, we agreed that there is a lot of overlap between Lao Tzu and Aristotle in terms of happiness, vocation, freedom. This. But I asked them, what do you think the difference is? And they almost all instantly realized it. I mean, I was perplexed, excited, inspired. What they said was, Aristotle seems stressful, because what Aristotle suggests, or at least from their understanding, I need to figure out what's my purpose.
That's what
what's
I
my
figured.
Destiny. Yeah,
yeah, like that feels like a lot of pressure. What is my purpose? What am I here
right.
for?
Now, let's say you can't figure out your purpose. Now I'm stressed. Or I figure out my purpose and I can't do it because of financial setbacks.
Or you're like, say when you met students in China, they weren't allowed to explore some of their true passions.
Right. When one of our favorite kids we met, I said to all of the high school, Chinese high school students, what do you want to be? What do you want to do? And this one gal said, you really should stop asking that American question to Chinese kids, because I want to be a painter. But my parents and the tests that I took told me I have to be in finance. So I don't get to make that decision. Now, I wish that all human beings got to make that decision. And I think that we should, and we should empower people to make that decision. But there's a kind of a tyranny to this. Telos is the Greek word for Aristotle. It's your goal, your purpose, the end zone. You need to figure out what you're meant to do. Then you've got to do that. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do it, you won't be happy. And I said, but how does that differ from Lao Tzu? Lao Tzu is like, for the kids, they said, well, unlike Aristotle, where you've got to figure out, like, I am meant to be a doctor or a lawyer or an architect. And every time something gets in the way of that, I'm disrupted and anxious and stressed out. If you just say, I'm just going to be natural, and I'm going to be my true self. They're very similar. The acorn in Aristotle is going to be an oak. It's going to be its true self. But the difference between the acorn and Aristotle in Lao Tzu, they recognized as 13-year-olds, was maybe the acorn is meant to be food for the squirrel, or meant to be a little boat that floats down the river for a grasshopper. Mm-hmm. In other words, yes, there is your naturalness, but there's not this tyranny of destiny or fate or some kind of locked-in requirement. Now, friends, you can go with it either way. The point of it for our class was just to help them, the kids, explore what happiness and freedom means for them. But I do agree that at least for Stacey and I right now, we are finding, I think, that the Tao Te Ching's version of happiness and freedom is practically and emotionally superior just on a day-to-day basis. Because when I was depressed, let's say in the middle of summer, saying, I think I'm meant to be a great philosophy and religion professor or scholar or author or something like this, which I still may do, friends, I don't know. But like, if I think that ego is attached to that or I need to do that, I'm always under this cloud or I always have this burden when I'm not doing it. So if I'm relaxing on a beach, just trying to get a little bit of respite, I feel bad because I'm not fulfilling my purpose with excellence or something. Whereas Lao Tzu, you know, and that tradition, the Taoist tradition, is sometimes you just got to go fishing.
Right.
And just put your feet in the mud. And that is natural. Now, you may do similar things professionally and artistically, but the freedom that the Tao Te Ching brings, that the kids, that these 13-year-old kids fully understood, was that you can let go of the ego part of it and the career part of it and the idea of fate or destiny and just say, I'm going to flow with the flow and I'm going to be my true self, my natural self, my spontaneous self within any random thing that happens to come my way, depending on how nature and the environment kind of turn out. And this then, I'm done with my little, you know, philosophy talk. I hope it also shares with you, dear listener, that I've been having a lot of fun with hanging out with the kids and talking to them, by the way, who are also coming up with it's only been, say 6 days, we came up with our year-long project. We're going to do aquaponics. We're going to design an aquaponics feature where we have fish and plants and gardening all That's flowing cool. together. We're going to put, you know, the blue lotus in the water. We're going to have tilapia. We're going to have, I mean, who knows if it works. This is our design. And then we're going to grow kale and oregano and basil. And I'm looking forward to it. I wasn't looking forward to doing spreadsheets, so I'm looking forward to it. I don't know what Jeff's destiny is, but I do know that that feels right. But on top of that, I couldn't do it. Okay, go with this. I couldn't, this thing that I love teaching these eighth graders, mm-hmm. I couldn't afford to do it without finding some other thing to bring in the income, which then leads us to the gig economy.
Right.
And we had been doing a little bit of Uber Eats in California, which is more lucrative because of legislation down there.
Or the propositions, yeah, that you get paid a little extra money.
Not so lucrative here. So we're looking at different things, and yeah, we're getting into events. But the thing about events, and that's where I want to like kind of turn our attention to, is not only did these events help us to do the things that we're enjoying, you're working at a wellness center, you're administering wellness for people, and I'm doing the, that's a funny way of saying it,
but yeah,
you're administering, and then I'm teaching. These provide us a base during the day so that we have a steady income. We're not really owned in the same way as we had been in the past by any entity. So yeah, we're working harder, but we're freer.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is the bonus that we want to talk about for the rest of today's show, is that we have gained experience, we've learned things, and we're having a little bit of fun, and
yeah.
We're open to new stuff.
I'm having a lot of fun.
So give me one example. What's something that you've experienced that's been fun with this kind of gig economy?
So one of the things that we did a couple weekends ago, we worked on Saturday and Sunday all day, by the way, from like 8 a.m. till 7, 8 p.m. at night. And we worked at the IndyCar races that came into Portland.
Yeah.
We were part of the official merchandise booth of selling merchandise and stuff, or welcoming people, making sure that the all the inventory was stocked, you know,
just retail stuff. Yeah.
So we'd help people find sizes and stuff if they were missing.
It was loud.
Make sure that, you know, that all of the the jerseys and gear were properly displaying the last name of the car driver instead of the front of the shirt, because always the back of the shirt mattered because it was all about the driver. And then we were working cash register and selling the actual merchandise. We also, at the end, had to take down this entire shop that was built. So everything from the flooring to the walls that would be holding all the racks of all the clothes,
yeah,
to the awning itself that covered the whole thing and, you know, created this whole, like, you know, temporary store. It was fascinating to see what goes into all of that. It was also fascinating to see how in basically like what, 4 hours time, we can like take apart this entire store that was built up, you know, a few days before.
Yeah, this like retail operation.
It was amazing.
I wouldn't do it every weekend.
No, I couldn't do it every weekend. Nope. I think I was very grateful that at my wellness center, I had access to massages and
acupuncture
afterwards because my body needed it. But definitely it was a fascinating thing to witness. We never have been to any kind of, you know, official racing, you know, we've never been to NASCAR or any car
stuff.
I've seen
some thing when I was younger myself. But
well,
yeah,
I haven't,
yeah,
but anyway, yeah. And it
but
was,
you got to see it.
It was really interesting to see the whole thing. I mean, I'm just saying, we would never have bought tickets to this event. It could be quite expensive, yeah, and I don't know.
Expensive or no, it wouldn't have even occurred to
it
us.
It just wouldn't have, yeah. But, being able, because we were able to like take our 30 minute lunch during like the race and watching the race, what I found fascinating was, I know it's one thing to see it on TV, but to see it in live time, like how quickly they change out the complete set of tires.
That was fun. Yeah.
And then walking up and being like, we couldn't touch it, but like 2 inches away from one of these little Indy cars and see, yep, like the tiny little steering wheel.
I bet they would have actually let us sit in it if we asked, but yeah.
But that actually yeah, looks like a video game, yeah, controller rather than a steering wheel, and the aerodynamics and like how they like just sit in this thing. And then to see how they go so fast that even for me to really understand what was going on, I would have to watch the screen a little bit of the TV version of it to kind of understand where everybody was at the race and everything. But it was just super fast. Like, you know, with the blink of an eye, they're past you. And just to think of the speed and like witness the speed at which they're traveling. And as you yeah, said, you're like, I could never be on the crew side of
no,
like the people that are changing the tires. Like, you know, you don't want to like be the person that like did it wrong, drop a lug nut, whatever it might be, but like
the entire race was lost because Jeff was stupid about the lug nut,
like,
wrench.
Ah! Yeah. You know, anyway, there are a lot of stress and pressure for them, but it was amazing to see these people at work doing what they do.
We never would have seen that had we
never
had
would have witnessed it.
So it didn't
never
even matter.
Would have even understood it. The other interesting thing I learned about that, which is hilarious, is that, you know, they gave us these IndyCar shirts or whatever, so they could tell like we were official workers there.
Yeah.
And then the people that would come in, they would think that we are experts on
yeah,
everything.
Well, they thought we were associated with, because we were by
yes,
proxy,
but
with,
they asked,
with the whole IndyCar
exactly,
brand.
They asked
yeah,
if we, you know, oh, do you guys travel with them and everything? Yeah. You're like, no, we're just contract employees. But
when they didn't ask that, they thought that they wanted to talk cars. And like, so I'm just in conversations all day long with dudes into motorcycles and their cars. And
we
like,
even like needed to kind of like look and study a little bit on each of the drivers, so we knew a little bit of what they were talking about. And then like also kind of memorize the store so we could like point them in the right direction for like what driver they were interested in.
Yeah, because if we didn't know who was who, then they'd be frustrated, you
yeah,
know. And it didn't matter, but it was like, it was kind of a fun game.
It was fun.
Interestingly, so that was one thing. I also met, as we may have mentioned, I met the governor of Oregon working a different event. For a while, I was really doing a lot of work with the Timbers and the Thorns, two soccer operations here.
You were
Providence Park. I was doing the security,
and sometimes you were even
right
like
on the
guarding them and their family members
yes,
to their cars, and like
yes, I don't know anything about soccer, so no, I'm like, you know, some people
were a few feet away, and there was security basically to like get these like famous players to their cars.
We learned a lot of things along the way. One thing, for instance, just as an example, I learned is that it's interesting about, say, the history of scent. The Mexican team, when there was an international game, the Mexican team, when they came out, I smelled them before they came because they were all wearing heavy cologne. Mm. And I realized that American dudes tend to not wear cologne anymore. Mm. And so that's just a little thing. But Stacey, do you remember when we first moved from Colorado, it was like the best summer ever. Well, at least I declared it to be, and it was a lot. It was pretty much the best summer ever. Was one of them. We moved to Washington from Colorado, mm-hmm. and in the time before we got a place, we stayed at a colleague's trailer,
fifth wheel,
their RV, and this is where we really got the idea to get into podcasting because we were listening to Adam Carolla's radio show, morning show. Adam Carolla had taken over for Howard Stern. Mm-hmm. And we had nothing to do but just like cuddle together as a family. And we would just listen to Adam Carolla every morning. And Adam Carolla was very compelling and it was like really interesting. And it was a great way to just kind of half awake lounge about. And then he lost his contract, but instead of going to New York, he was going to be able to go to New York and take over for Howard Stern. He decided to get into podcasting. And then it was at that point we realized that podcasting is a possibility as a way of just enjoying communication. But the thing, and I haven't even listened to Adam Carolla in a lot of years, but one of the things that made me sad, it wasn't necessarily his fault, but one of the things...
And he might even be different now.
Maybe he's doing great. All I know is that the thing that kind of made us not continue to listen to Adam Carolla was that he began to loop on the same rants that he had had from when he was in
radio.
Well, no, but when he was in radio, he was in contracting, he was doing construction. Mm. So a lot of his stories that made him interesting came from his experiences in the world with people. And then he disconnected from people. And so the show got less interesting. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so when you're only in one world, you don't know about these other worlds. What Stacey and I are excited about is even though these gigs have been making us physically tired, taking away from the opportunity for us to do extra side stuff we love to do like this, we realize that by not going out and having these varied and sometimes intense experiences through the gig world, we're missing out on understanding what's going on in society.
Mm-hmm. But also through the coworkers.
Oh, yeah.
And through their eyes and seeing like, okay, so there's one person that we work with that they are nomadic and they live out of their van. And then they found like contract work in the city through this app that they had experience elsewhere in another city with it, I believe. Yeah. And then now found new work here in this area and they'll be here for a bit and then they'll probably move on too. I mean, they were already,
that's a kind of freedom.
They were already even listening to say, oh wait, this is going to move to Salem. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll go to Salem for a little bit and work those jobs.
That's
then.
Dow. They're flowing.
And they can keep flowing. And then his partner does stuff like for web design and stuff. So like, you know, she can do what, you know, she wants or whatever, mm-hmm. and then they make money that way. But being able to, even what we learned about with this candlelight stuff is that they come into a town gets excited, they kind of reach a certain level of the population.
Saturates.
And then it like kind of levels out. And then there's going to be like a baseline of what they do. So it just kind of moves to like lesser things. If you could follow this event going from, if you can follow this event going from town to town, there's a lot more gigs and a lot more money.
Yeah.
If you keep being,
live in your
if
van
you're nomadic and moving along with it, and you'd be known as somebody that knows like the work and probably more likely get the jobs.
This dude got hired because he had been working in Dallas and he could just pop right into the one that's here.
Yeah.
And he can flow spontaneously. Well, let's go to this real fast. Beyond the fact that it's been really fun making friends with people of all ages, mm-hmm. from all backgrounds, a friend from Argentina, a friend from Nigeria, you know, people who have been local. We would not have been able to have the breadth of new friendships and really people like are hanging out.
Yeah.
Like I was kind of getting lonely and feeling kind of sad and lonely because God bless if you're listening, if you're one of my old friends from California, you know, it was really nice that on a Tuesday night, I knew for a fact that if I just stepped out of our apartment, we were going to hang out and have close friends we could hang out with.
Yeah.
You know, we're very happy that we made our move. But it was hard to not have friends. We now go through Portland. Like, this is our new town.
Even at the IndyCar. Okay. So we're at the IndyCar place.
Let's just go. So we're the IndyCar races. This is not our scene.
We're working at this event. Then at our break, we go over and see that our friends from down the street, thanks to
Scotty, Traveling Jeff's, Tap Jeff's House. We'll shout out Traveling Tap House from Mississippi Street.
Traveling Tap House, and then also Yard Bar if you ever go down.
Yard Bar is what it's
if
called.
If you ever go to Mississippi here in Portland. But
they were vendors.
They're vendors at the event, and then there's a food truck that they have
Lulu's
on their
kitchen.
Property, Lulu's Kitchen, and
Mexican
they
food.
Were there. So we would eat Lulu's Kitchen, say hi to them.
And then go get a beer at the next place.
Then go to the Traveling Tap House and say hi to our friends there, you know, and then go back to work. And it was just crazy because it's like, how, you know, it's people are kind of like, how do you know these people, you know?
But, temporary boss, if you're listening, yeah, we might have had a beer on that job, but we're cool. But what I'm saying is it's totally true because what's interesting is, and then people are like, wait a minute. You know the people that run the Mexican place? You've only been here a year and a half. You know the people that run the Mexican place? And you know the people that run the Traveling Tap House bar down the road that are literally the two adjacent vendors to us at this place? Then there was somebody who came by that wasn't such a good character, and he was walking by, and I mad-dogged this guy, and he's like, wait, I could only imagine. These people that just moved into town, how do we know all these people?
Yeah.
It's because we have been open to the universe. We're being natural. We go out there and these are people that I care about now. Like there's like all these people that I'll meet and to one extent or the other and in different industries. And I will say one more thing is because of that, being able to get into working with running concerts and comedy shows and different things. That's all I've ever really wanted to do, right? I mean, like, maybe when I was younger, I wanted to be the performer, and I'm still doing some stuff. But for me, just to be in that world, you know, I don't care how much I'm getting paid so much on a Tuesday night. If you're listening, friends, feel free to pay me more. But, you know, after middle school, I could take a nap, have a bite to eat, then I go and set up for an indie band that has a hip hop artist that's opening. And all of a sudden I'm finding new music, making new friends, inviting them to come do master classes for my middle school students in music, talking about ways to maybe make a kind of a Portland festival of music. You know, my dream right now, friends, is to podcast 24/7. Okay. But if I can't do that, I'm kind of, you know, I'd love to do that, but like, what
of course
you can't podcast 24/7 if you don't have the experiences to help bring to the conversation in many ways. And so another, I'm kind of being playful, but the other goal that I have is that someday I'd love to be able to put together a series of kind of mini festivals where I find four or five venues within a region, part of Portland, where people can come get a bracelet and be able to patronize the local musicians, the vinyl record store, the local eateries. And then they can hit all these different places, but also support local artists because I've been getting really tired of these festivals where it's just super expensive, super corporate and no fun.
So I would say that we went to the Hoco Fest in Tucson, Arizona.
One of our favorites.
And what we really loved about it was that it involved like multiple spots around the whole city.
You got to know the city.
And so there was like a small concert here that might have like, you know, 50 people that were going to come for this person. Mm-hmm. And then like the, you know, a different bar down the street had a different thing, and like, you know, various acts throughout the whole town, and you kind of like go from place to place to place. You can buy a ticket for a show, you can buy a ticket for the whole weekend, but it was the idea that you can kind of piecemeal this thing together, mm-hmm. and it wasn't unaffordable. Like, you could, like, for $15 or $20, I think you can buy one concert, one show.
Right.
For 100 and something, you can buy like the whole thing for the whole weekend. And then you could like pop in and out to all the different venues if you wanted and taste a little bit of this and that. We bought like, I think it was like 2 days of it or something. And we were able to explore things that we went there because of one person, but we explored a few other things.
So many
and
people. T-shirt it, makers. But
it was, it was so amazing because that was a time when like, it was so hot. It was so hot. And this rain was going to come, but it was like this like moment of like,
it was waiting.
It was waiting. And it was like this strange, like, anyway, we were listening to Bill Callahan at the time.
He destroyed it.
And like, what was he singing? Like, the like dirty earth
earth,
and then like kind of like the earth orgasming, and then like it like rains, you know, and all this stuff.
The
and it was
desert.
Just like you could not have asked for like this like perfect kind of like setup of like this whole, I don't know, it was just this amazing
and
experience.
We ran into Mariachi Luz de Luna.
I know, but we never would have like seen all these other pieces of it
at a traditional corporate festival,
right?
And we had to be in Tucson.
And the mariachi band we saw, because they had to bring them in last minute because rain delayed the main performers.
Yeah.
So they brought the mariachi band to help like perform and entertain the crowd, because the crowd is like waiting before they have to like kind of like, make sure the equipment's all good, that it didn't get, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like too wet or anything and all this stuff. Anyway, but that was... using the whole, like not using, but like experiencing the whole town and encouraging people to go around and experiencing various venues within that whole place. And I love that model. And you did too.
We wanted, and we
so
want to figure
you're saying
it out.
Is like, that'd be really nice if we could like do something like that in Portland, where, you know, something at the Alberta Rose Theater, something at Mississippi Studios, something, you know, and then there's various food carts and stuff around. Like, you could do, like, kind of like you walk around town, you know, get local accommodations and then walk around town, and you can either pay for a single event.
Yeah. Help the town rather than exploit the town.
Yeah. And then, you know, but or multiple events or whatever. But anyway, that would be our dream.
We have met, I mean, in the last few months, good contacts in music, production, comedy, acting. I mean, even just the friends at my school, the drama teacher, Nicole, at my school, it was in a production of A Midsummer Night's Dream. She's teaching these kids. I would have wished, I mean, I had some, you know, I had Billy Barty as, I had some good acting teachers when back in the day. She is going to, like, allow these kids to be happy and free just through the practice of training. And then Tara, who I'm going to be on her podcast. She runs a podcast called Frequency Broads, and she's a teacher at my school. My point is, those meaningful relationships and connections and intersections and collaborations are priceless.
Right.
And I never realized this until I was able to be vulnerable enough to let go of the security that comes from an executive type job.
Yeah.
I am tired. You're tired.
Mm-hmm.
Our feet hurt. Our bones are achy. But I'm happy and free. I mean, I'm getting there. I'm like on that track, because even at any moment, my anxiety is different, because if for any reason, one of these gigs, they say, you're not working out for us. I'm like, whatever. I mean, I'm not good at it the way some of our colleagues are, with like, you know, they'll show up late, or, you know, like one of our friends, like, yeah, I'll wear the uniform, but I'm going to rip the sleeves off and
roll them up, you know, you've got to have their own flair, you know.
I don't know how that's going to, you know, like play out in the long run, like career
also,
wise, but it is an act of subjectivity.
It is interesting, because so much of our lives, we've been in charge of things. Yeah. Well, and actually, they've recruited you to be in charge now.
I'm medium in charge.
Shift leave while the main person is on maternity leave.
Fair enough.
But it is funny because
I always accidentally go like, that's not why I got into this. I got into this to not care.
There is a difference of being in charge versus just showing up. But still, it's not a job you have to take home with you after, other than we had to return the rental car. Oh, and by the way,
that was funny.
Interesting thing is, while I'm on my lunch break at my work, because since it's a corporate account, Jeff cleared it with his boss that, you know, that I could pick up the U-Haul that's needed to pick up the stuff out of storage and all that, for these events. Mm-hmm. And I go down to pick up the U-Haul. I get paid more money than my current job on my lunch break.
To go pick up the U-Haul.
For the hour to like go pick up this U-Haul, and I'm eating my sandwich that I made from home in the car as I drive. But anyway, and then, so I go there, and then they're telling me like double check the, you know, the gas, because apparently, somebody's done a run on all the gas cans or all the trucks here, and
they
siphoned out the gas. And so what I look at the car, the van they give us, they say it's full, and I look and it's basically 3/8 of a tank left. And they're like, oh, okay.
You know, I like your math, by the way. You should teach my numeracy class. Keep going.
Well, I mean, that's the most exact
appreciate 3/8,
way to say
it.
If you're wondering, between a half and a quarter of a tank.
I don't think they were wondering, but that's good.
And it had been previously all the way full. Anyway, the point is, I thought that what was interesting about that was, kind of interesting, everybody I've mentioned this to, they kind of laugh like, you're gonna go siphon out the gas at the U-Haul place. I guess it's like nicer that they're siphoning it out at the U-Haul place, which is a business that they can write it off as an expense, versus actual like people that just have to take the hit personally, but it kind of was genius, because there's more gas than you could ever probably possibly fill
your
tanks.
The U-Haul vans don't have locks.
And then we see later, like, homeless guys with these, like, gas, like, cans.
Just
like, walking, and I'm like, okay.
I know where they get that gas.
They did not get that gas at the gas station. But anyway, all of that to say, one more thing.
Yep.
It is interesting with some of these side gigs, too, of dealing with the public in like taking a pulse on what are people thinking, what are they saying? And a lot of times even they'll come from different areas into Portland. I think you've had a couple of experiences related to the bathroom, if you don't mind sharing at least like one, somebody saying,
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm excited about the story.
All right. Well, so there was a guy that was complaining about gender-neutral bathrooms.
Oh, yeah. So one of the things about Portland is when we have these events, there'll be concerts, and they draw in non-Portland people into the place. And so there's always kind of, you know, a Trumpoid that, like, shows up and thinks he's going to talk the way he normally talks to a white dude with gray beard. That's me. And doesn't really know that he's in Portland now. And so anyway, this dude's complaining. He's like, oh, my problem with the gender neutral bathrooms is that now I got to wait in line. And I'm like, bro, you do know that for like decades, women have had to wait in line where you just go like pissed in the sink and no one could care because no one's in there very long. Like, his biggest problem, he thought he was going to make friends by complaining that women were like screwing up his ability to piss fast. And I'm like, you do see that like pretty much everywhere you've been for like your entire life has been women waiting for a long time to just urinate or change
sometimes
their tampon.
Sometimes doing what I call the potty dance, you know, like holding it.
Your biggest grievance is that now that the libs have taken over,
that you have to wait.
You have to wait to piss the way other human beings have had to piss for generations. So he doesn't understand where he is, but that's also
you learn part of about it. Society.
Yeah, I forget because I can get so trapped in my world. I got a little bit mad at him, but it, you know, it's like that was the world that I want to leave behind. Now I'm in Portland, but sometimes that world impinges on it. No matter who you are, I guess one of the lessons, Stacey, I think what you're trying to say is that when you work the gig economy, it forces you to have a variety of experiences to keep attuned to the pulse of society as it is now, you can get so easily lulled into thinking that the 12 people you talk to every day are the world.
Yes. As well as, so one thing that's also was really eye-opening for me, I mean, and I've been in other situations kind of like this, but especially say for my first event with the Candlelight, is people are coming in to see this performance. I'm standing on one side, there's double doors. I'm standing on one side of the door, and across from me is a black gentleman. And watching to see as people come up, whether even if he might greet them first, they might look at me and want me to seat them.
Yeah, you can see people's biases.
And I see their racism. I see their biases. Like,
yeah, you wouldn't, yeah.
And it was very obvious sometimes. And I would, you know, it just, it made me aware of like what he must feel all the time, because he was smiling.
Yeah.
He was willing to greet them. He said hi first. Mm-hmm. And they refuse to acknowledge him.
Yeah.
And now they want to look at me and have me seat them. And like, you, until you can like firsthand be a part of some of, you know, those kind of situations that you don't realize exactly how much, even in a city
somewhat
like
random,
Portland.
Yeah.
Now, Portland, I must say a lot of the other areas around us, you know, aren't as liberal.
Oh, so, no.
And they're coming in from other places.
Right. This is, yeah.
So then you see that even in a city like Portland, how much racism is alive and well in a lot of these people. And I,
homophobia, transphobia.
I look into their eyes, and it's, I see fear.
Yes.
And that's what
like,
strikes
we're like living
strange
in the Munstersville. Like, we're very comfortable. But, like, if you came from outside Portland, I do understand. If you grew up for a lot of your life with a very homogenous world and you came to Portland, it would be terrifying. And there's stuff that happens. But, like, we're fine. We've not been hassled.
No.
You but, know.
Well, I mean, we've got stuff stolen from us. Whatever,
yeah, I mean,
you
that's
know, all that,
no, but I mean, our personal safety has, like,
you've gotten a air shotgun.
I did get a drive-by assassination by airsoft guns, but I'm like, with little pellets.
Little pellets.
No.
I'm just saying.
That's not something that some people would enjoy, you know, in Peoria. I understand. And that's fine. Maybe you don't want that. What we're saying, friends, is that it may not be for you, but if you're looking to mix up your life, why not try for a second getting on some apps, going into some agencies to find some temp event work, just A, pick up a little extra money, see if you can meet some people and find some industries that might, and friends and connections that you might not have ever been able to connect with. You're making some money, but you're also getting outside of
yourself.
Witness
a world outside of the world that you normally are in, just to see what that world is like. Because you will grow from that experience. You will see things mm-hmm. from a whole different
yes.
perspective.
It's growth.
And I don't know, I think you get closer and closer to reality and the truth when you're not just existing in certain bubbles.
Now, so for me, at least right now, I might change my mind, but working more hours for less money has put me into a place where I feel closer to happiness and freedom. Partly for me is it allows me to keep teaching middle school, which I'm really loving, instead of getting some other college job and moving out of town. So that I can do what I love, teaching these middle school students, and then picking up the extra jobs to be able to afford it. It works together pretty nicely, especially since I've got some extra time over the summer. It's been good. There are, however, some ways in which we could see this is a big problem. Societally.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So it's good for us.
A lot
of my friends working in the gig economy, we're anarchists having fun, but we also recognize there's a big problem. What would you say are some of the issues?
So one of the things, obviously, as a contract employee, we'll see exactly what happens with all the taxes and stuff. But I do think that there's a way in which, the company itself being less committed to, say, There's no health insurance. There's basically like you're going to be, you know, responsible for all of your own taxes. I think, and I could be wrong, but anyway, there might be Social Security that we're extra on the hook for that the employer normally would pay half. I don't know for sure, but we'll figure that out with our taxes. I will say that the idea that there's no commitment to the employees themselves,
as much as
there's no commitment that
we have no
the
commitment
employees
to them.
Have to them. I do find it kind of genius though that these operations can be like fly by night, because this whole, like what we've witnessed with the whole Candlelight, they don't own any vehicles. They get rentals like U-Hauls, as we mentioned.
No HR.
They have a storage unit. They've invested money in a storage unit, which they pay probably month to month. They bought some candles, you know, that they need to, you know, have. There's no HR for those employees. Mm-hmm. As soon as events aren't working out in a certain town, they can leave that town entirely and never come back.
Or pull back on the concerts.
They pull back on the concerts. They can like regulate it. Because they rent venues. They contract artists. So the musicians are contracted. All the employees are contracted. So it's like literally, it's like you set up this operation in one night. And it can go away entirely and never have any assets or anything else to rectify. If you go on, you know, you're not going to go into bankruptcy because unless you like keep investing in shows that don't make money, I guess then maybe the whole,
but you don't
LLC,
have a lot of overhead.
There's no overhead and there's no assets and there's no commitment to anything. And so all of it really can be pretty versatile and you move and flow as you want through towns and, and do things. So,
it's a savvy business model.
It's a savvy business model, but I would say, you know, health insurance, commitment to people, like all that, like, you know, like so there's none of that part.
We're
of
at
it.
A time when the writers and actors are striking, when the United Auto Workers are striking. And we were talking about this amongst some of our gig employees. We're like, well, there's no strike to be had. Like, we don't.
You just don't do the job.
Yeah.
If nobody will take the job.
But it's so we are kind of free, but we're also not, because we're living within an overall system of the world. So it may be, so I guess what I'm saying is that the gig economy, when you're talking about the happiness factor, the freedom factor, and the gig economy, you can be happy and free because you're not owned by your job and you don't have to like think about when you go home. But they don't have to think about you.
Right.
And there is a downside to that. So for me, I would love to see a society where we have a universal basic income or some other kind of libertarian socialist model where our basic needs are met. We are not afraid of starving. We're not afraid of not having a place to live. But if you want to make a little extra money so you can take a trip somewhere and visit somebody, then you do the gig economy. To me, that would be ideal. Where everybody has their healthcare handled, everybody has their basic needs met, and then everything is gig economy.
So there was somebody that I met when we were working in IndyCar that has also sometimes done the Candlelight. And she's just around for several months visiting her daughter here.
Yep.
And so we'll do the extra work while she's visiting her daughter so she has money. Ultimately, you know, Mike, go on to another direction or whatever. But so if you want to stay, maybe if you have the ability to be mobile, if you want to be in an area for 6 months, visit your children and grandchildren.
If you want to quit your job as a pastor or a cult leader tonight, you can go and be a normal person tomorrow as long as you can afford to live off the gig economy.
Or
it's a thing. It's
start
a lifeline.
Supplementing your income.
Supplement
with
it now.
The other experiences to build a savings if you don't already have the ability to have the savings.
Stacey, we're over an hour, and basically the punchline, friends, do you know why we're talking about this? Is because we know that we've been waiting for a long time to be able to come up with some piece of wisdom or advice to people, and I cannot tell you, we're not going to say your names, the number of people who are desperately trying to get out of the religious path that they got into or the career path they got into. They don't know how to get out of it. by the way, if you're a doctor and you want to stop, I cannot help you. I have no idea.
That's too much
money.
But
if you, you know, if you invested in an MDiv or a PhD in English and you're working at a Christian school and you want to get out of it and you don't know what to do next, I think the debilitating aspect was like what I never had any idea what I was going to do. And there is at least a stopgap that you could pick up soon. And maybe you test the waters. Maybe it's not for you. But if you're thinking about bailing, or if you're in an abusive relationship and you say, I have been a mom, a lot of the people we've worked with, like one of the people we work with, I love her so much. She's like so smart. She doesn't have the resume that she would have had if she hadn't been working entrepreneurially with her ex-husband, right? But like she doesn't have like the quote work experience with like the normal HR records or so forth. If you want to try to find a way to escape your situation, at least dabble in some local temp jobs. Because very often, if you're not doing meth and you show up at least close to on time, you may find yourself a supervisor pretty soon. And maybe that's not the last step of your career trajectory, but it might very well help you escape from a very unhealthy situation.
Offer, yeah, windows into, yeah, new places. And I would also mention that if you have a position like you're teaching or something and you have your summers off and maybe you want to pick up and pick and choose when you want extra employment during that time
right.
without committing long term to anything,
right.
then
right.
this gig economy, especially because summers are the times where more events happen, mm-hmm. that there's more work opportunities during that time as well.
Yeah.
So,
but the whole thing may not be... you know, overall good for the solidarity with all workers. But in the current situation, this may be a stopgap for yourselves. We need to, as a society, ask, why are we in this situation in the first place? I'll deal with that. But now we're asking, how can you hustle? How can you try to find out? Also, discover things that you love. Like, I'm really loving working with concerts. And maybe I want to be a booking dude at some point. You know, like I wouldn't have known how to get into that. It makes you feel closer to happiness and freedom. Friends, that's what we want for you. That's what this show's about. If you have been a patron, we thank you. We are keeping all the names of our patrons. There is a book that we've had written for a couple of years. It's a Bible study on basically spiritual anarchy, how Jesus can help you get free from people who come at you in the name of Jesus. But in many ways, we're so happy to be in this new world. It's hard for us to go back to that world. So we're not sure what we're going to do with it. We're not sure how much time we'll have in the next few months to do regular podcasts. We're going to do as much as we can because we're loving it. We love talking to you. But we
stop. So what Jeff is saying is we put a pause on accepting the donations from Patreon because...
We just don't have time.
We don't feel good about taking money and not necessarily being able to do a regular podcast because
we are going
to have to supplement our income with these other work situations. And so because of that, we value you. Thank you so much.
Yes.
We appreciate
you. And we thank you.
You
got us through some hell.
And out of
some life
deep,
hell.
Deep respect for you all, we don't want you all to keep sending money our way when we feel like we can't give you what we thought we were promising as well as what you deserve.
Yeah.
So we will podcast as we can, but we can't commit to
a certain schedule
as regular. We can't do weekly ones necessarily. We might.
We might start doing more now that we're free.
We might. But the point is,
I just don't have to worry about it.
We don't want to let you all down and have you support something that isn't offering, you know, what we originally signed. When you signed up, what we originally were saying that we were going to do.
That said, if you follow us on Instagram at Dow Surfers, T-A-O Surfers, if you follow us on TikTok, subscribe to this podcast and share it with a friend. So we will continue to be the best selves we can try to be. We're going to try to keep seeking out these stories and these possibilities of sharing with you ways of kind of getting a little bit of wisdom about how you, friend, could be happy and free. But really, for me, when I'm teaching, I'm trying to get the kids to be happy and free, trying to help ourselves be happy and free. But for you, friends, this show is dedicated to the proposition that we wish you
peace upon peace.